And the really unfortunate thing is a lot of women that are in perimenopause or menopause right now never had the benefit of seeing a pelvic floor physio. So it's such an unknown conversation. There's just a lack of information. They're often gaslighted by our healthcare system, unfortunately, by saying, oh, that's super normal. Don't worry about it. Everyone has it. You just have to deal with it. So there's this lovely population of women that just deserve better care so that we can help them live the best possible quality of life.
Welcome to This is Perimenopause, the podcast where we delve into the transformative journey of perimenopause and beyond. I'm one of your hosts, Mikel.
And I'm your other host, Michelle. And we know firsthand how confusing, overwhelming, and downright lonely this phase of life can be.
Join us as we share real-life stories and expert advice to help you navigate this journey and advocate for your best health.
We used to think menopause signaled an end, but really, it's just the beginning. On today's show, we've got Kathleen White, a registered physiotherapist specializing in pelvic floor health. Don't know what that is? Don't worry. Neither did I until I turned 40 and started peeing my pants. Luckily, we've got Kathleen here today explaining why this is happening to us during perimenopause and also giving us a few tips on how we can fix it. And she's going to tell us how to do a proper Kegel. Hey, Kathleen, welcome to the show.
Hi, it's great to be here. Thank you for having me.
I'm going to dive right in, Kathleen, with a question about pelvic floors. Could you explain to us and our listeners what a pelvic floor is?
Well, I happen. Ooh, I know some of you props. Can't see this, but I do happen to have. Ooh. I don't go anywhere without this. I have one at work, one at home. And it travels with me.
You drive around sometimes in your car with a pelvis?
Every once in a while. Yeah, sometimes I find it in my children's toy bin. I don't know what they've been doing with it, but...
That's concerning. They're both boys.
They're little though, so it's like it's very much. Ooh, there's bones. So the pelvic floor is actually a group of muscles that sit inside of your pelvis. So if you think of your pelvis kind of like a giant bowl, the muscles that are at the bottom make up your pelvic floor. So it's a group of them. They all have to work together. They help to hold our organs up. They play a role in continence, which is making sure you don't pee yourself or poop your pants. They play a role in sexual function, as well as they form the basis of our core. So they're a pretty cool group of muscles that no one really wants to talk about.
We want to talk about those muscles today. In particular, what happens to those muscles or that grouping of muscles in perimenopause and menopause or postmenopause? Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yes, one of my favorite topics, because I think the more we know, the better. So I'm over here shouting from the rooftops to just get it checked and let's start early. So any muscle that undergoes a trauma, and so we think of trauma in the wide sense of if you birth a baby through your vagina or carry a baby on your pelvic floor for 9 months, that could be a trauma to a muscle. It usually needs a little bit of rehab. So muscles can be stretched out. There could be some tearing. Even if you haven't had a baby, sometimes the pressure we create down can create some issues on your pelvic floor. So what we want to do is make sure, like any other muscle, it is functioning optimally. So we can start to limit some of the symptoms that either weak or overactive pelvic floor are causing. So also just to clarify, this is specifically just the pelvic floor. There are changes to the genitalia as well that we can talk about. Those kind of get classified as urogenital symptoms of menopause or perimenopause. So we can kind of look at them as two kind of different things, but we'll see changes in both those areas with perimenopause and menopause.
So essentially, perimenopause, menopause, postmenopause, there are hormonal changes that are affecting those tissues as well.
Correct. Yes. So from a pelvic floor physio perspective, as we're looking towards menopause, we do want to make sure that that pelvic floor is functioning optimally so that it plays its proper role in making sure that we don't pee our pants and can still have its lovely function from a sexual and support function, because that's still really important too. But then we will also want to work on how do we help support people who may be having some hormonal changes which could affect their pelvic floor, but could also affect some of the other tissue in that area. And the really unfortunate thing is a lot of women that are in perimenopause or menopause right now never had the benefit of seeing a pelvic floor physio. So it's such an unknown conversation. There's just a lack of information. They're often gaslighted by our healthcare system, unfortunately, by saying, oh, that's super normal. Don't worry about it. Everyone has it. You just have to deal with it. Or, you know, if you're having pain with sex, have a glass of wine. Totally fine. Everything would be great with a glass of wine. So there's this lovely population of women that just deserve better care. And so we really need to work from a health perspective of how do we educate them of what changes are common that we can work on and what changes do we maybe need other providers to assist us so that we can help them live the best possible quality of life.
I think what you're saying, there's a lot of symptoms in perimenopause that it comes back to. This may be common, but it's not normal and it's definitely not optimal. So what can we do?
Absolutely.
So a topic that unfortunately is near and dear to my heart is the urinary incontinence, the peeing of the pants. And I'm really curious, like, why is this happening? And I understand there's a few different types. There's a few different reasons it might be happening. I'd love to talk a little bit more about that.
So urinary incontinence is classified as any unwanted leaking of urine. So that could be a drop or that could be a full loss of bladder control. And so when we're looking at it, there could be stress incontinence, which is when you cough or sneeze or jump and you leak. There can be urge incontinence, which is that the classic is the key and door syndrome that you get out of your car, you put your key in, you're like, oh my God, I have to go to the bathroom right now. And then there can be a mix of both. There are a few other types, but usually there's a neurological involvement in it. So when we're looking at kind of the perimenopause, menopause population, we're usually talking about one of those three types.
And why is this happening?
Yeah, great question. So one, it could be that there is some pre-existing weakness in the pelvic floor from previous trauma that was never addressed. So tearing or carrying big babies, and that pelvic floor was able to manage. But unfortunately, as we age, we lose muscle mass. We can lose anywhere from 2 to 8% of our muscle mass per decade after the age of 30. So sometimes it is building some strength, not just in the pelvic floor, but in the surrounding tissue. Sometimes it is due to bladder irritants, which are our favorite things, coffee and alcohol and bubbly waters, anything carbonated, all of those things irritate our bladder. And she is a bossy, bossy queen. She doesn't like anything that irritates it. So if something irritating goes in, she wants to get rid of it. So sometimes we have to look at some of those lifestyle factors. Sometimes it can be a tight pelvic floor. So a pelvic floor that is sitting super, super tight and in a shortened position. And so the best analogy is your bicep. And so if your bicep's in a shortened position, it's really hard to catch a ball or pick something up because there's nowhere for that muscle to go. So the pelvic floor is the same way. If we cough or sneeze, we need it to quickly contract in and up to close off the tube that urine comes out, which is called the urethra. And so if it's sitting short and tight, it has nowhere to go. It can't give us that extra bit of support so we can leak. The last one that I will often talk about is what I lovingly call pressure management or the tube of toothpaste. So if you think about a tube of toothpaste with a lid that's not quite on, if you squeeze super hard around that tube of toothpaste, toothpaste is going to come shooting out the bottom. And so for some people, it is how we use our neck and our back muscles. It's how we breathe. It's how we grip our abdominals. So all of that muscle tension can create a lot of downward pressure, which can lead to more leaking.
I never would have thought like the way I'm carrying my shoulders or like the tension I'm carrying there could make me leak. That's interesting. That's really interesting to me.
What about painful sex? That's a pretty common symptom, particularly in perimenopause. Can pelvic floor therapy help this? And maybe start with some of the causes again, but also what can be done about it?
For sure. We can definitely help. we're always a great place to start. There's really low risk to pelvic floor physio because we are a conservative treatment. So the risks and benefits, the risks are really low and the benefits are really high. So it's a great place to start versus medication or surgical intervention. So pain with sex is quite common. It's actually it's very common in menopause and perimenopause. That's often where you're hearing it, but it is quite common for a lot of women. Just no one talks about it. So the one big difference between our younger population and perimenopause is there are a lot of hormonal changes that are going on. And so there are hormonal receptors in our tissue that really respond to estrogen, but also there's some new research coming out about testosterone and how that impacts the ability for that tissue to be nice and plump and moisturized. And so when we lose those hormones, it is drier and thinner, a little bit more prone to tearing. And so that in itself can really deter someone from wanting to engage in sexual activity because that can make it quite painful. In those cases, lubrication can be really great. You have to make friends with it. There's also some really great hormone options, like a topical or suppository estrogen can work really, really well in those cases. And on the other side, we'll also look at what that pelvic floor is doing. And so some of those women may have had a tight pelvic floor their whole life, and there's a lot of stressful changes that happen with menopause. And so if your body is stressed out, the first thing it's going to do is contract that pelvic floor. So we have all these lovely lifestyle changes that are going on. We may have more stress, more anxiety, because there's a higher risk of stress and anxiety and mental health concerns in menopause. That activates our higher brain center, activates our nervous system, and our body goes into that fight or flight mode. So there can be tension from that fight or flight, or there could be some underlying tension. And so that tissue should be able to relax really nicely initially during sexual activity. And if that pelvic floor is super tight, it's hard for that relaxation to happen. And so that can also lead to pain with sex. So pelvic floor physio is great at helping from the, can we help calm your nervous system? Can we teach you how to relax your pelvic floor? Can we teach you how to stretch that tissue? Can we talk about lubrication? But sometimes we do need the help of family doctors and naturopaths and gynecologists to look at some hormonal options. Because the one really hard thing with some of those changes through the tissue, those urogenital changes, is that they are the one symptom that will continue to progressively get worse after perimenopause and into menopause. So the sooner we can start addressing those, the better. Whereas like the hot flashes and the weight gain and the fatigue, that stuff tends to kind of last 10 to 15 years after the end of menopause. So I should have classified at the beginning. Generally, menopause is the time frame once you've been a year without a cycle. So anything before that is perimenopause, anything after that is menopause. So the terminology is changing slightly. So once you've had that year without your cycle, you can continue to have symptoms for about 5 to 10 years after that, and most of those symptoms will resolve, but the changes to the actual tissue of the vagina will continue to become more significant. So addressing it sooner rather than later is really important.
My understanding there too, Kathleen, is that if you don't address them and you do have changes that are significant, the damage can be permanent. There also is, you can get to the point of no return, I guess. So it is that correct?
Yes. Yeah. That's the current understanding in the literature. Yes.
Yeah.
Which is why conservative care, starting early, is great. I encourage anyone who's over the age of 35 to start looking and learning about perimenopause. The more we know, the better it will be. There's actually some really protective effects of starting estrogen if it's recommended by your healthcare provider earlier rather than later, so that we can try and minimize some of those symptoms, but stay on top of any of those urogenitary changes.
Actually, Kathleen, I've got a question. Might make some people a little uncomfortable.
Go for it.
I've heard that masturbation can be helpful. Is that true? Is that true?
It can. Yes. Yeah. So just like any other muscle, if you aren't using it, you may start to see some changes in it, some disuse changes. And so there's some good support of starting to like stretch that tissue, have it expand when people engage in sexual activity. The pelvic floor actually should go through a period of like really nice relaxing near the beginning, and then it will contract again at climax. And so masturbation can be great for you to learn about your own body and what works for you. And there's some really great resources like Better Sex Through Mindfulness or Come As You Are. There are two really great books that the better you're able to connect with your body, the more pleasurable sex can be. And that is one of the big concerns for a lot of women in perimenopause and menopause, is that with those change in hormones that they just find it's no longer pleasurable. So starting to learn what works for your body and what works for you can be really, really great. It can help lubricate that. Some of the lubrication comes from hormonal changes, but from adding lubrication into that area, that can help keep it nice and moist. And there's cool new research that is coming out about using vibrators as a biofeedback unit to help stimulate the pelvic floor and actually help build strength, which is great because that's stuff that women can do on their own at home. And I love anything that empowers women to take control over their own healthcare. So some cool new research coming out, and that's a really affordable way for people who may not be able to use or access pelvic floor physio. If they're worried about building strength, then a vibrator can be a great option.
I have a question for you, Kathleen, in terms of what pelvic floor therapy actually looks like. And I think a lot of people don't even know what their pelvic floor is, but even more people don't know or understand what pelvic floor therapy is. Maybe you could tell us a little bit about that.
That's a great question. I will preface my answer by saying I'm a little bit of a quirky bird, and I like it that way because I am in a facility where I have access to any exercise equipment that you could possibly imagine. So just like there are orthopedic physios, so like regular sports medicine physios that may work in different areas, I have a specific subspecialty to work in a fitness realm, and it makes my heart super happy. But in general, pelvic floor physio will look at what your pelvic floor is doing, what the rest of your body's doing. It'll help with incontinence, low back pain, hip pain, pelvic pain. And we look to optimize how your system is functioning. So it starts with an assessment, just like regular physio. The one difference is that pelvic floor physios are allowed to do internal exams, which means we can go in vaginally or rectally for both men and women to see what their pelvic floor is doing, how it's functioning. So we look at, is the pelvic floor able to contract? Is it able to relax? Are there any trigger points? Are there any painful points? Is there any scar tissue from birth or trauma that maybe need to be released? And then generally we will give exercises to help you connect with your pelvic floor and core better, and then start to integrate that into daily movements, regular exercise routines. So that's where I get to step in, where a lot of my rehab goes into the fitness that my women are already doing. So we want your fitness to be your rehab. So I will specifically work with people who are leaking with jumping or running or dynamic movements, or want to lift heavy weights without back pain or peeing their pants. So I have a lovely little side niche, but I have colleagues in town that work a lot more with people who have pelvic pain. So there might be a lot more internal work. So there's lots of different kind of subspecialties, which are really, really great, but generally it does involve an assessment. But in my world, you don't have to have an internal. That seems to be kind of the big barrier for women accessing care because they're quite worried about it. There's lots we can figure out from listening to people's history and watching them move. I don't do as many internals as other pelvic floor physios do because I have that lovely fitness focus. And really for me, it's about how do I make things meaningful for my clients? So I see a lot of women who have failed they feel like they have failed pelvic floor physio, or will say it doesn't really work for me because everything they've done has been lying on the floor or lying on the bed, and someone passively stretching their pelvic floor, which can be great for some people. But for other individuals, it's not meaningful to their body and they need to learn how to use their body in a different way. So for example, someone might be given the cue of, okay, I want you to think about engaging your pelvic floor by lifting a blueberry with your vagina. That's not a meaningful cue for most of my athletes. But if I tell them, I want you to think about holding a fart in an elevator, they're like, I know how to do that. right? So that's first off a cue that means something to them that they know how to do, because most of us just like don't know where our pelvic floors are. So we have to do a little bit of work to say, okay, cool, this is what your pelvic floor is. But most of my athletic population, they know how to squat, they know how to hinge. And the great thing is we have amazing research that tells us that the best way to connect to our pelvic floor is with a cat-cow, a squat, a hinge, and a glute bridge. So if I can teach you how to use your pelvic floor differently in movements that your brain already knows how to do, now we've taught you a transferable skill. So that's why using your fitness as your rehab is such a beautiful way to do it. Because if you know how to do yoga and you like yoga, you don't have to think about doing yoga, but I can give you a cue that fits beautifully into what you want to do. Then you'll be like, okay, cool, I get it, because I get to do my my yoga, but I'll put my physio into my yoga, and then people are doing it. So they're more compliant. It makes way more sense to them. And it's more meaningful on their everyday basis because they're like, I'm doing it on a regular basis and it makes sense to me. There's other ways to do things. We just need to keep having this discussion of it's not just about the internal exam. It's not just about releasing your pelvic floor. It's about making you more aware of what your body is doing and how do we make that meaningful for you.
It's interesting you say that, because for me, what connected in your class was the breathing. I now know, okay, when I'm, you know, releasing my breath, I do this. When I'm taking a breath, I do this action. And that, so that's been really helpful. Yeah, it's great.
I love that.
You've helped me.
I think something we should probably circle back on or maybe mention in a little more depth is women who haven't given birth vaginally, or women who haven't had babies or haven't had babies vaginally, because I think there's a misconception that then you don't need to worry about your pelvic floor, right? Pelvic floor issues, I think, are commonly associated with, well, I gave birth, someone gave birth. So maybe you could tell us a little bit about pelvic floor challenges in perimenopause for women who haven't carried a baby, given birth.
Yeah. For my women who have never been pregnant, never given birth, we want to make sure that they're not having any back or hip pain, because about 80% of back or hip pain in women usually has a pelvic floor component to it. So that could be a kind of a lack of coordination or not knowing where that muscle is, or it could be a muscle that's super tight and not able to relax. So we want to check that, because that can lead to pelvic pain and hip pain, back pain, and pain with sex. But also, I think there's so much we can learn by just learning more about our bodies, what our pelvic floor is, how it works, what to kind of watch for, so that if they're starting to see symptoms, then to come in to see us. Like if they're seeing bowel and bladder changes, they don't have to live with it. We're happy to help, and there's things we can do about it. And even from just a menopause education perspective, I'm finding more women that just want to know more about what happens during menopause, what to expect, and how we can help them there. So the biggest thing, if their pelvic floor seems clear and they're not having any issues, is from a, how do we keep you active, right? Like I mentioned earlier, that there's a significant loss of muscle as we age, but there's also bone density issues. Our bone density peaks around the age of 25 and then starts to decline from there. And so how do we help women make sure that they maintain good bone density so that we decrease their risk of injury when they're older? And that a great way to do that is strength training and adding some impact into it. And then the other piece I would kind of often encourage them is some of those lifestyle factors that as a physio, I can help with. How do we start to manage stress? How do we regulate your nervous system from a physical perspective? How do we look at supporting kind of the four pillars that we want to work on in menopause from the physio side of things? So those four for me are really sleep, diet, exercise, and stress management. And so as a physio, I can start to address all of those. Sometimes we need other lovely providers to help with that, which would be counselors and naturopaths and your family doctor, registered dietitians, all kinds of, we need a village as we progress through life. One of the lovely things that kind of popped up in the menopause class was, we often chat about how when you have your babies, there's usually this group of women around you that also have babies, and it creates this little hive to support you, and it's so lovely. But then when we have this other major transition in our life, which is menopause, we're on our own, right? So how do we start to create a village and a collective to support women during this transition? Sometimes it's healthcare providers, but sometimes it's other women, just to have those conversations.
You've told us a little bit about pelvic floor therapy and how that can help women with incontinence issues. I've also heard there's some solutions like Botox and surgery and medicine, and I'd love to know a little bit more about that.
Mm-hmm. I will say that my area of expertise falls within the pelvic floor and strength training side of things as a physio. There are other options available. The best evidence we have in the research for incontinence is isolated pelvic floor muscle strengthening. My bias in life is always movement. So if we could also get stronger and work on our pelvic floor symptoms at the same time, I think that's great.
Michelle mentioned Kegels a few minutes ago. What are they and why should we do them?
You guys have the best questions. Okay, a Kegel is a pelvic floor contraction. It was shockingly named by a white dude named Kegel. so they are an isolated pelvic floor contraction. So when we breathe in, the pelvic floor should lower down and lengthen. And then as we breathe out, the pelvic floor should come in and up. And so that contraction is called a Kegel. It can be great for those that need Kegels. It is not great for those that don't need Kegels. So if someone has a pelvic floor that is tight or overworking, or has trouble relaxing, like being able to move through its full range, a Kegel is not a great option. So the unfortunate thing is often women who leak are often told to do Kegels. And so for about half the group, that's a great option. And for the other half, it's not great. And then what research has actually found is that most women do Kegels incorrectly. So that's where pelvic floor physios can be great to help teach people how to do Kegels properly and determine whether or not they need them. But yeah, it's the actual name for a pelvic floor contraction.
So how do we do it?
Yeah. So the research suggests that the best way to cue a pelvic floor contraction is to think about slowly and gently contracting the muscles around your anus, which I lovingly call hold a fart in an elevator. So the way I would teach it is I want you to think about your pelvic floor like a bowl. And as you breathe in, that bowl is going to lower down and get longer and bigger. And then as you breathe out, you're going to slowly and gently tighten the muscles around your anus, and that bowl is going to come in and up.
We're all doing them right now.
I know. So the really fun trick that I can hear that some of you are doing is that by changing the shape of our mouth, we can actually get our pelvic floor to engage without thinking about it, which is great because the less we do, the less we think, the better our brain can like do stuff. It doesn't like to multitask. So if you purse your lips like you're blowing the petals off a dandelion as you breathe out, that will help you engage your pelvic floor. You'll feel a little more lifting in and up versus if you try and breathe out with your mouth open. And now everyone's going to try it.
And now do we breathe in through our nose? It doesn't matter.
For this right now, it doesn't matter. I generally would cue a breath in through your nose because our nose is designed to filter and heat up the air as it goes into our body. And a lot of us have become mouth breathers, especially with mask wearing. So going back to a nose breathing actually makes us more efficient breathers.
Awesome. That was fun. I just did a few Kegels there.
Perfect. Great. Perfect. Love that.
If we need to do Kegels, how often are we supposed to be doing these? Or does it depend on the patient?
It will depend on the person. If someone's learning how to actually use the muscle, we actually want higher repetitions because that helps with our learning pattern. So usually I would say kind of 15 to 20 reps three times a day, but I usually have people habit stack. It's a cool thing I learned from a book called Atomic Habits. And it's this idea of if there's something we're already doing, like say, for example, new moms are breastfeeding all the time. So anytime you feed your baby, I want you to practice 20 Kegels. So it stacks a new habit on top of an existing habit or something that you have to do. So it helps us kind of remember to do them. But when we're learning a new skill, we want higher repetitions more frequently. If it is working on a more if you need strength in a more specific setting, we'll try and put the contractions into that particular kind of like movement pattern. Generally, higher repetitions several times a day is good. So our brain learns.
For people who have pelvic floor muscles that are too tight and they shouldn't actually be doing Kegels, but they're leaking when they do a jumping jack or they cough, is there sort of something that is the opposite that they should be doing that's kind of standardized? I know that you can't, you need to treat each patient individually, but is there advice in the other direction that you can give?
Yeah, absolutely. So we would do a reverse Kegel. So we focus more on the inhale portion than the exhale portion. So the exhale is when the contraction in and up happens. So for someone who's got a tighter pelvic floor, we think about breathing in and letting everything lower down and lengthen. So lovingly, I call it letting a fart out, right? Because you know that feeling of like letting everything relax to let that, or just to let that fart go. So it's that feeling of the bowl coming down and out. So we focus a little bit more on the inhale. The best position to practice that in is a reclining butterfly. So that's lying on your back, feet together, knees open. It has some good evidence behind it, and it's quite a comfortable position to be in. Some people prefer kind of a wider leg child's pose or a happy baby. Those are also really good positions to practice that in.
Amazing. Thank you. I think we're getting close to time. You probably need to go and check someone else's pelvic floor very shortly. So,
and all this talking about peeing has made me really have to pee. And I had the sparkling water, so you know, I'm just like,
so your bladder is bossy and angry.
Bossy, angry bladder.
It's bossy. But listen, the thing is, like, my job is not to tell you like what to do and what not to do. My job is to educate you so that you can learn how your body functions, and then you can make the decisions that are best for you.
If only, sorry, I just wanted to interject there and say, if only every medical provider had that mantra. Imagine.
Yeah. I mean, I spend 90% of my day working with women, and mostly busy professional women. So when you tell them like, nope, you shouldn't drink coffee, most of them will have some unkind words back to you.
Yep.
I'm a coffee drinker. I love my coffee. I am fully aware of what coffee does to my bladder. I know I can have one coffee before I run. If I have two or three, I'm tempting fate. But that's a decision that I get to make. That's my choice. It's my body. And if I decide to have that third coffee, I know what the risks are, but I get to make that choice. So Michelle, you drink your sparkling water. You go ahead, you do your thing. You know, we've had this discussion. You know how sparkling water affects you. But if that's something that gives you joy in your life, we still need all the joy. I would be an angry, angry woman if I wasn't allowed to have coffee. Like, no one wants to see that. So we're just gonna like all like take a breath, recognize how things affect us, and say, okay, cool. That's a non-negotiable for me. And so that's the other hard piece, right? Of like, you have to decide if you leak and you drink coffee, and you know that every time you drink coffee, you leak, that's a decision that you have to make. It's a hard one. It sucks. It absolutely sucks. But you get to make that decision because we are all adults.
We can buy Depends.
I mean, I would prefer you didn't, but
that's bad for so many other reasons.
Before you go, Kathleen, what's the one thing you want every woman to know about their pelvic floor health?
You deserve better. Most women get brushed off by the healthcare system. Leaking is not normal, and you deserve better. If pelvic floor physio hasn't worked for you, or your doctor has brushed you off, or someone has told you it's just normal, let me know. Let's find you another provider. Let's get you the support that you need, because you deserve better. We all deserve better care.
Amazing. Thank you. Where can our listeners find you?
Clinically, I work at Depth Training and Physiotherapy in Waterloo. You can find me on Instagram at Kathleen White Physio, and I think also on Facebook at the same. And if you want to send me an email, it's just kathleen@depthtraining.ca.
Fantastic. Thank you so much. So much great information.
Oh my God, it was so good. It's so good. And now I really, really have to pee.
Do your cat stand up and do your calf raises?
My calf raises? I don't think I remember that one.
So stand up and then do like 15 calf raises.
I already standing. I already don't have to pee as much.
So anytime someone gets urge, we work on urge suppression techniques. So basically part of the urge is like habits that our brain forms and how it's processing information. And so the more we go pee, the more our brain starts to give us urge earlier and earlier and earlier. And so what we have to do is start to reprogram our brain to say, okay, cool, it's good. Like, I just peed an hour ago. Like, I should be able to go longer. Mm. So we implement these strategies that distract our brain from having to go pee. So one of them is calf raises. And that's because the muscles in the calf have a similar nerve supply to our pelvic floor. So by doing a bunch of calf raises, it activates the muscles and usually distracts us. Three nice deep breaths and then three pelvic floor contractions, because sometimes we have to go because we're holding tension in our pelvic floor. So the breaths and the contractions help with that. And then the other one is counting backwards from 100 by 7, because that is such crazy mental math.
That's not happening.
That's why I give you calf raises.
Yeah. Thank you.
You're welcome.
I think I'd get to 93 and then I'd be like, yeah.
Every time I prescribe that, people are like, why is it so hard? I'm like, I know it's supposed to be. That's why.
Supposed to be.
Yeah. Anyways, there's your fun fact for today.
Thanks so much for listening to the show. If you like what you hear, please take a moment to rate and subscribe to our podcast. When you do this, it helps to raise our podcast profile so more women can find us and get a little better understanding of what to expect in perimenopause.
We also read all the reviews, the good, the bad, and the ugly, to help us continuously improve our show. We would love to hear from you. You can connect with us through the podcast, on social media, or through our website. Our information, as well as links and details from our conversation today, can be found in the show notes. This podcast is for general information only. It's designed to educate, inspire, and support you on your personal journey through perimenopause. The information and opinions on this podcast are not intended to be a substitution for primary care, diagnosis, or treatment. The information on this podcast does not replace professional healthcare advice. The use of the information discussed is at the sole discretion of the listener. If you are suffering from symptoms or have questions, please consult a qualified healthcare practitioner.